Hi, you're listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life with me, your host, Mimi Novick. I'm so happy and thrilled to have you here with me. I have created this series for all of us so we can change our world together and live a more holistic and balanced life. Together, we will share lots of inspiring stories from all walks of life, speak with leading experts, enjoy healthy living ideas, explore music and subjects that inspire each other to always have hope. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all of you. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Secrets for an Inspirational Life. How are you all today? I hope that you are well wherever you are in the world, and I hope that you are spending time with the people that you love. And that's one of the things I think that we find difficult in these days, a lot of the time, is that we simply don't make the time to be with those that make our heart skip a beat, that give us that intense serenity and beautiful friendship, and of course, this overwhelming love. And it's important. It's so important because we don't know how long we have with the people that we love. Circumstances change, they may move away, who knows in life. But what's important is that we don't have regrets. And every person we meet is never a coincidence. It is always meant to be for a reason. And with that, open your arms and embrace everybody that comes along your path that gives you that feeling of peace and love. Now, I am absolutely delighted and very honored to welcome my special guest, who is the very charming Lord Martin Rose. Martin comes from a prestigious legal background, having studied law and has enjoyed notable successes. He entered the world of entertainment at the age of 15, which began a long and successful career. He says he loved his days in the entertainment industry, but accepted that he needed a profession to support his lifestyle, and he decided to study law. He has been asked often, where do entertainment and law meet? And his answer is, in the courtroom, one needs to be a good actor. He has worked alongside many greats, such as Anne Shelton, Ken Dodd, Sylvia Sims, Danny Williams, to name but a few. He has shared the company of many great actors. Some of the most memorable moments were with Charlton Heston and dining with Margaret Thatcher. And there are many more fantastic stories to tell in the book that he has started to write called My Life Already. Martin dedicates his time and expertise for the benefit of others less privileged through his many charitable endeavours and events, encouraging the high profile and also celebrity friends and political connections to contribute to his worthwhile causes. Today, he shares his incredible life story. Welcome, dear Martin.
I'm not quite sure what to say. Is that me you were talking about?
Yes, it's you. Take a little bow.
I've just done that.
How wonderful to have you here today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm overwhelmed.
Oh, doesn't it all sound so fantastic? And the most wonderful thing, it's all true.
Absolutely, it's all true. There are those who will say it's impossible because you look so very young, but I'm not as young as I look as well.
Oh, Martin, now, How are you? First, let me ask you, how are you in your part of the world? How is life treating you at the moment?
Cold and miserable, but that's the outside. woke up this morning and I thought it was in Siberia.
Is it in -4 or -5?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Once it hits past -5, it can be -30.
I didn't want to get out of bed. In fact, I set the pen on my wife.
Oh, dear, dear. It is very, very cold.
I've actually experienced -30 several years ago when I went to Finland, to Lapland, at Christmas time.
And that is somewhere that I'd love to go.
Oh, it was fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. And it was -30 outside, but +30 inside, and I had to keep turning the thermostat down.
-30, though, I know it's, of course, it's extremely cold. I was on Mont Blanc, and it had the sign -30.
Yes.
But as I said, once it goes over a certain minus, it actually all feels -10, -30, -20, it all feels the same.
Yep, absolutely. And it got to the point I got so fed up wearing these heavy clothes, I didn't in the end, and it made absolutely no difference at all.
Now, Martin, you have led and lead the most incredible life. And for all of the people out there listening, you just have to wait and hear his story, because it's remarkable. All the things that Martin has done, all the things that he does now, it's truly, truly amazing. But tell us, let's start at the beginning. Where did this incredible life begin? How did it all begin?
Well, I won't go through how it began, because my parents would be terribly embarrassed, God rest their souls, if I actually mention how it started. The one thing I do know is that I was a celebration. And I worked that out many, many years later. My parents' wedding anniversary was April, and I was born in the January. It didn't take much calculation to work out, so not only was I wanted, but I also gave pleasure even before I was born.
Oh, what a beautiful thought.
It is when you think about it, yeah.
Yes, how very lovely.
Yeah, with regard to where it really began, I suppose in the early days of watching television and watching variety shows, I was drawn very much that in the very early days of black and white television, there was a variety show which was based in a restaurant, and you've got to be old to remember it was called Cafe Continental, and it would start off with the a waiter coming close to the screen saying, "This is Cafe Continental," and the music would start, and they would have various acts on there, dancing, etc., etc., comedians. And I used to watch it with great fascination, and that, I suppose, drew me to the world of entertainment.
Yes, it's always, they say this, and I'm convinced of this, actually, and I repeat it many times because I believe it, is that our childhood is the promise of our life somehow. We know in our childhood what our dreams are.
Well, yes, I suppose we do. We don't realise it at the time because we're too young.
Yeah.
The interesting point about Cafe Continental is many, many, many years later, I met with a wonderful lady called Phyllis Rounce, and she started just after the war an agency in London in Regent Street. And we became good friends. And in fact, she became the godmother of my, how can I explain it, first son of my second marriage. Yeah. And it turned out that she was co-director of Cafe Continental all those years previous.
Oh, how fascinating.
But there we are. Yes.
So you entered, so you entered the world of entertainment at the age of 15, but
Yes.
you were also a lawyer, a
Yes.
solicitor. So
Yes, but
how does
what?
this, how does all this explain, how did all this come about?
You know, the great Charlie Drake, "Hello, my darlings." He asked me this question many years ago. Well, it would be because he died many years ago. But nevertheless, when he asked me that question, and the answer was, I was 15. I went to the top of the road, bought a new harmonica, and went to London. And that's exactly how it was. My parents went mad. 15, jumped a train from Gans Hill and went to London. And I found an agent, and my first gig was at the Russell Hotel in front of the Committee of 100 for Nuclear Disarmament. And I've still got the contract somewhere. It was for 2 guineas.
Oh, how, oh my gosh. How did you know to do that, to get
I
onto
don't
the train?
know. I had various objectives, and I had to do it. But that was very funny because I played the harmonica and the guitar, and I sang, and I could do a little bit of a tap dance. I thought I'd include it all. So I went on the stage with this big guitar case. One of the little novelties was I could play a miniature harmonica. It's only an inch. It's got four notes in it. And I reached into the guitar case and pulled out this miniature harmonica, much to the amusement of everybody there. And I suddenly realized I was also a comedian.
I just don't know. I'm thinking about what you're saying now, and I'm thinking,
Yes.
how does a 15-year-old get it in his mind to do this, and then not only to do it, but actually to physically go to London?
Yeah.
You know, it's not the days that were that they are now. It was a big thing to do. And to have that bravery to do it.
Yeah, but I don't think bravery came into it because the world was a much safer place in those days. Apart from which, I think we were much older when we were that young. Looking back, I didn't feel like a kid of 15. I felt much older. But nowadays, 15-year-olds are not hardly worldly at all, are they? They're just young, very
True.
young,
It's
and dare I
true.
say, mollycoddled by the parents, I suppose.
Yeah, very true, actually. When I was 15, I remember thinking, I don't know, that I was somehow so grown up and I knew so many things. And
Yes.
actually, you're quite right, Martin, because now I look at youngsters and I think, you don't know so many things. It's a worry because you go into the world and they haven't got a clue, most of them.
No, absolutely. I'm sure we were much older in mind.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. It's a very good point, and it is mollycoddled. I think that's the correct word, because you had to work things out for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
There wasn't, I remember going to well, it was middle school at the time, and my parents said to me, "Don't think that we can help you. We don't know. You're going to have to work it out yourself."
Yeah.
And I was petrified, but I did. And that what gives strength of character, I think.
Yeah.
So you get the harmonica, you go to the hotel and you perform, and then what happens?
Well, other gigs came along, but I realized that, a couple of quid here and there, that was not going to give me the lifestyle that I hoped for. And so I, a few years later, I started looking at professions, and I started studying law. And the end product was I had a law firm. I was my area of law was insolvency, bankruptcy, liquidation, and that expanded through to litigation, crime, family law, all areas of law. I met with a solicitor who was a partner, once again, many years afterwards, and we formed a law firm, which was very substantial. We had 5 fee earners, 14 secretaries. We had a 2-floor office building with a car park, and it was incredibly busy. Oh, and we also did, of course, the bread and butter stuff as well. There was property and conveyancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we achieved greatness and notoriety. But come a time when I suddenly realized this had taken over my life, and so I had to consolidate.
Okay.
Show business, however, has always been my love.
And how did you keep the two going?
The difficulty, but determination.
Did it go hand in hand? Was it like, in a way, a double life? Or did it nicely sort of synchronize?
It did, but it was rather strange. I mean, one minute I'd be in a courtroom representing a client, and the following day I'd be producing a show or a play or a musical. It was quite strange. I mean, I worked, once again, I worked at various theatres. I managed to combine the two, made it very, very busy, but most enjoyable.
It's amazing, really, how you were, the two. Yes, I understand what you're saying, that solicitors are excellent actors and barristers, of course.
Absolutely.
The best I've ever seen, actually. Mm. But what did you do with the shows? Biz aspect of your life? What were the sort of things that you were doing that you were involved in?
So in what area are we talking?
What did you do in the showbiz? Theatrical productions or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I preferred variety because that was easy. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew what they were going to do, so we didn't have to have, you know, rehearsals and for 4 weeks beforehand. It was just a case of a band called. I remember one I did, and that was at the Auditorium Theatre in Palmer, and I was asked to produce a variety show there for the expats.
Mm.
So I flew over, started organising it. And that was with Anne Shelton, Rod Hallam-Emu, Jess Conrad, Carl G. Robinson, Sylvia Sims, Ken McIntosh and his orchestra. But there was no rehearsal. We just got together, timed it, and produced it. And it was the best show the island had ever seen. But I also did a couple of musicals. They needed rehearsal, of course. Couple of dramas, but mostly it was variety.
Mostly it was variety.
Yeah. I produced Ken Dodd.
I remember Ken Dodd.
Oh, bless his heart. He was amazing.
What was he like? That's what I wanted to ask you. Was he as zany as he was in his role as what he played?
Ken was, how can I put it? He was easy to work with, but had no idea, no sense of time whatsoever.
Mm.
Example, it was at the Key Theatre Peterborough, which is a 500-seat theatre, and it was necessary to do 2 shows, late afternoon and an evening show, in order to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So on the first day, I was walking about in the car park, pacing it because Ken hadn't turned up. And 15 minutes before curtain, he pulls into the car park. And I said, "Ken, you're on in 15 minutes. And he said, "Well, don't worry, don't worry." He went in, changed his suit, walked onto the stage. as easy as that. But getting him off the stage was a different scenario because he never stopped. And so when the late evening house was waiting to go in, the early evening house was still in the theatre.
Oh.
And eventually, when he finished, the late evening house went in and they were stuck there for half the night.
Oh.
If he finished before 1 o'clock in the morning, it was early. Really, it's good. Quite seriously, you couldn't get him off the stage. And one of his jokes, for example, was, if you don't laugh, I'll add 10 minutes to the show. And he wasn't joking.
Oh, Ken, but with his hair.
There was no rehearsal. He just did it. He was fantastic, absolutely hilarious. And yeah, he was naturally a funny man.
And were you involved also with singers?
Sorry?
Were you also involved with singers as well as actors?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Yes. Ken was a one-man show, of course, but the variety shows, in 1985, late 85, 86, can't remember when, but Les Dennis had teamed up with another comedian, Dustin G., and they worked very, very well together. They were in Panto, and Dustin had already had four heart attacks. He had another one. And unfortunately, a couple of weeks later, he died. And Les Dennis said, I cannot work alone. I'll never work again. And I said, yes, you will. And I produced a show at the Alex Theatre, Birmingham, with Les Dennis as a sole performer, with Maggie Moon, Nuts and Bolts, the Crankies, some singers, dancers, etc., and relaunched Les Dennis as a solo artist. And he carried on from there, bless him.
Imagine that.
Hmm.
Did you manage these people as well, Martin?
No, definitely not.
No.
I remember getting a call
from
an agency in Covent Garden. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his name? Mark Purcell. But anyway, he said, can you come and have a chat? I said, yeah. I said, what's the matter? He said, well, we manage Freddie Starr. And just wonder if you'd like to take him over. I said, no. He said, he'll earn you $1.5 million a year. I said, no. And I knew if I did, I'd be dead in a week. Because managing, you can't. You are 24/7. They never leave you alone. You know, they suddenly wake up in the middle of the night and finally got a ball somewhere. They're on the phone to you. there was absolutely no way I could manage. But producing, directing, yes, I loved it.
But did you work with Freddie Starr, didn't you?
All of them, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one production with Sylvia Sims, Rosemary Leach and Peter Goodright, and we were rehearsing at the Fortune Theatre in London. And I was standing in front of the stage directing what I wanted, and Rosemary Leach, God rest her lovely soul, came to the front of the stage and said, you'd rather be up here, wouldn't you? And she was right. I'd rather be on the stage rather than directing it.
Yeah. And did you have any acting roles?
Yeah, a few, but nothing to talk of. I just like to entertain.
Yeah.
You know, I just like, and I still do. I mean, even when I do my charity events,
yes,
I can't help but pick up a mic and sing a song or tell a joke. It's in my blood. I mean, I proposed to my wife singing to her in front of 170 people.
Did you? What did you sing?
Well, This was a funny one because it was an event, a charity event, tribute for Les Reed, who wrote Delilah for Tom Jones, etc., etc., etc. He died several months before, so I decided to attribute lunch, charity lunch. And I said to his daughter, Donna, I want to propose to Penny. Do you mind if I use today? She said, not at all. So I picked up the mic, and there was an old song called Bamia Bistol Shane. And it starts off of all the girls I've known, and I've known some until you came along. I was lonesome, blah, blah, blah. And I changed the words. And I said, until you came along, I had no life. Penny, come on now, be my wife. Penny thought I was just going to be singing. Didn't hear exactly. Duncan Norvell, the comedian, and his other half, Lynn, heard it. Lynn shouted, Penny, Martin's proposing to you. She came running out onto the dance floor. And I got down on one knee.
How romantic.
She got down on one knee. And they had to call the paramedics to help us stand up again. No, that bit's not true. I tell you that there was lots of them there. PJ
and she said yes immediately, Martin.
Sorry?
She said yes immediately.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course. But PJ Proby was there. Anita Harris, Barry Mason. There was lots of them all at the event, and it was the applause was fantastic.
Oh, how fantastic!
Yeah, but there was another time when I was producing a variety show for the benefit of the local hospice, not far from where we live, and I didn't tell Penny, but I rehearsed the theme to Love Story, and the second half of the show, we've got the stage all dark. I'm in the wings with a mic. The music starts playing. I start singing. Nobody knows it's me until I walk on the stage, and then there's a few steps from the stage down into the auditorium, and I know exactly where Penny is. So I carry on singing, and when we get to the point where I reach for her hand, it's always there. That's exactly what I do. I then walk her to the front of the stage, and I start serenading her to the song. And she took on the appearance of a beetroot.
Are you going to sing for us today?
Sorry, what?
Are you going to sing for us today?
Well, not today, no.
I was hoping that you were going to do that exact song.
No, I think we need a little bit of music.
Oh, well, you're going to have to come back again and do a little song.
Well, I'll tell you something funny about this, because having done that, I actually did record it on CD with the music backing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And that did you really?
Time, yes, I did. Yeah, I've done it before. But that particular Christmas, apart from other presents, I've wrapped the CD up and I've handed it to Penny. I have to add that Penny's a great fan of Rod Stewart. Somebody has to, I suppose. And
Rogers,
she gets all excited because she knows that inside this little package is a CD, and she opens it, and then she sees our photograph. Suddenly, realizes it's not a Rod Stewart CD. So, I think she covered up the sadness, but nevertheless.
So what did you do? You recorded the song that you sang that day, and you put it on a CD for her.
That's right. Yes.
Oh, that's a very nice gesture, Martin.
Oh, it's terribly romantic. Yes.
Well, oh, it's beautiful.
Much better than Rod Stewart.
Absolutely. Who's Rod Stewart anyway?
No idea. No, it's some old fella who's been trying to sing grapes in the island. Sorry, Rod, if you're listening.
I'll tell you something funny. It's funny that you mention him. A friend of mine said to me, how much is it to hire Rod Stewart?
Depends how high you want to hire him, doesn't it?
Yes. Exactly. And I said, I don't know. What do you want to hire him for? Well, I don't know. An event. So he researched it. And I don't know how well he researched it. So for people out there, don't take this as gospel in any way, shape or form. But apparently, there's a site, of course, where you can hire celebrities. Yes. And his beginning price is $1.5 million. That's rather steep. Really? And I don't think it's sort of negotiable.
Well, I'm going to say this, and I'm not really prone to advertising, but I'm available for much less than that.
Well, tell us what you do. Tell us what you can do. You can sing.
Yeah, I sing. I dance. I play the harmonica. I tell jokes. I can do it for two and fourpence.
So for anyone that would like to hire Martin, we'll give details at the end.
Yes. It has to be cash, two and fourpence.
Yes, of course. Now, you do a lot of work, Martin, an exceedingly large amount of goodwill with your fantastic charity events. How did you begin all those? What inspired you? Because I know that you really are really someone who helps so many people. How did all that begin?
Because so many people needed help. And I have the contacts. I have the business acumen. And putting it all together, I ended up organising these wonderful celebrity charity events. And I have to thank that the wonderful celebrities that support me in these. Mm. I've also got a lot of followers. They're always at the Regent's Park Marriott Hotel, where I've got a very good relationship with the marketing department, that they go out of their way. And it's like going to a high-class wedding. The food is excellent. Everything is top class. And I've done this for NHS, stroke, Alzheimer's, autism. The next one I'm doing is on the 14th of April, and that's for the Liam Taylor legacy. Liam Taylor was the victim of a knife crime at the age of 19, where he was fatally stabbed, and his grandmother, Julie Taylor, she formed this charity. And Idris Elba is supports it, because he's involved with anti-knife crime as well. Mm. And all the money goes to buy bleed bags, which they're hoping will go across the country. I mean, given an example, last year alone in Essex, bleed bags saved the lives of 6 people. Now, take that across the country, you can save the lives of hundreds of people. And it's not only just for knife crime, but for accidents where the bleeding has to be stopped. And these bags...
Explain, Martin, please, for everyone listening, and for myself also, what is a bleed bag?
The bag itself contains various different patches that go over the areas that are bleeding. Part of it can be used as tourniquets. Part of it can be used as pressure to stop the bleeding until the paramedics and ambulances arrive. And in fact, Julie was with us yesterday showing us all the contents of these bleed bags. Each one costs, I think it's about £120, but there's so much in it. So any injury can be dealt with, unless, of course, it's a heart injury, an internal serious bleeding. But if there's bleeding that needs to be stopped from outside, these bleed bags will do it. And this is
what this lady is actually raising money for.
That's what she's raising money for. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing she does, she's been recognised now for giving talks to schools, helping the police in all areas of knife crime in an attempt to stop this terrible thing that's going on in this country at the moment. And the actor Idris Elba is also involved in trying to stop this terrible situation that we're suffering. All the youngsters. I mean, she said to me yesterday, kids 8 years of age carrying knives.
That's unbelievable.
I know. What's happened?
And of course, don't know, Martin. What has happened?
The other problem is television news. It tells people, it almost advertises the criminology of what is happening and makes it almost romantic to the youngsters. And it's not romantic at all. I mean, these kids, they end up in prison for years and years having just pulled a knife and killed somebody. They're taking people's lives for nothing. But there again, I could go on for hours about this.
It's, in a way, a glamorization of crime.
Absolutely. They think it's the ideal way to live. And then years later, they suddenly realize they're in prison. They've had no life.
It's true. And it's a very sad situation, and actually a very worrying situation, that now when you talk to people out there, people always say, don't argue with anyone. Actually, don't even have a cross word with anyone. Just be quiet, keep your head down, and stay out of any sort of confrontation. Because these days, you just really don't know what you're dealing with.
Mimi, you said absolutely rightly, these days, going back a few decades, if you had an argument with somebody, all right, if it ended up as a fight, you ended it. You picked the guy up. You went and had a drink afterwards. People weren't out there to kill each other. That wasn't the object of the exercise. You had an argument. But now you have an argument, they'll pull a gun, they'll pull a knife. They want to kill.
Yeah.
Something's happened to this country. Maybe the world, I don't know, but I see it over here.
It's funnily enough, I was talking to someone earlier, a client of mine, and we were having exactly this conversation as, is it here in the UK? Because when I think about when I, you know, was living abroad, it was a completely different life. Yes. And things were different and are different over there. When I go over there, it's absolutely completely different. But here, I remember speaking to my friend just before Christmas, and her neighbor had said to her, be quiet. And she didn't want to be quiet because they'd been disturbing her baby. Yeah. And he said, I've got a crossbow in the boot. I mean, who has a crossbow in the boot? And it's not a rough area at all. You would never think it. Mm. You just wouldn't think it. And he wanted to pull out this crossbow.
Yeah. Yep. It's weapons, knives, guns.
Mm. Yeah.
We never saw this 30, 40 years ago.
But when did it start? This is the thing I can't work out. When was that line crossed, Martin?
I think we all know the answer, but we're certainly not going to say it, and especially on this program.
Yeah. And the internet, on another road that we go down, the internet has a lot to do with it as well.
The whole situation is it's publicised. As I said before, there are those who think it's glamorous, romantic, to be able to pull a knife and kill somebody. If they stop publicising it, maybe it might slow down, it might stop. If they started imposing worse penalties, it might stop. I mean, at the moment, if you know if somebody kills somebody, they go inside for life, 15 years, that's life. Life should be life. But you know, some of your listeners will probably argue that. There are other listeners who will probably say, well, let's have a referendum and bring back capital punishment. There has to be a deterrent somewhere along the line for these terrible things happening. But nevertheless, the event on the 14th of April is with this in mind, to raise money for these bleed bags. We normally raise anything between £3,000 and £6,000 on an afternoon. So there'll be hopefully a lot of money for a lot of bleed bags, and pray to God, a lot of lives saved because of it.
Yes.
And that's the importance, that if we achieve that, if we save lives, that's the main objective.
It's incredibly brave of her to turn her sorrow and this unexplainable grief that she must have suffered into something worthwhile.
The family has suffered and continue to suffer. But
horrific.
Yes, she is brave and she's determined to do something about it, because something needs to be done about it. For my part, all I'm doing is organising a charity event in the hope of raising money that will help. And that's my objective.
Well, that in itself is a huge thing to do, to give the platform and the ability for people to join together and, you know, hopefully raise some money for this worthwhile cause.
Absolutely. But each one is for a charity. I choose the charity.
You choose the charity.
They're always very, very special charities. And the one we did for Alzheimer's, for example, that was for Anita Harris, bless her, because her husband, Mike, was in the final stages of Alzheimer's. He didn't even know her. We raised, I think, £6,500 we raised that afternoon. Unfortunately, Mike died a little while afterwards.
Oh.
But Anita, bless her, she was very, very appreciative. And once again, she's a lovely friend as well, bless her.
Oh, it's so, after everything that you hear going on in the world, and then to hear that you do something so noble and so worthwhile, it adds hope. It's sort of, listening to you now, it sort of restores my faith in mankind, really, that there are people out there, such as yourself, Martin, that give up their time and do everything that they can for these worthwhile causes.
Mimi, if you were here at the time that I'm preparing and organising these, you might not think that, because I'm sitting at my laptop. I do absolutely everything. I organise the day. I deal with all the meals, etc., the various diets. I do the selling. I do absolutely everything, the table plans. And during it all, I'm shouting, as Penny will confirm, I'm never doing this again. I've had enough of this. I must be made.
But here you are, doing it again and again.
Absolutely. We often laugh, because Penny, I look at her and say, I'm not doing this again. That's the end, the last one. And then she laughs, because she knows I'm going to do another one.
Yes. How many of them do you do? A couple a year?
Yeah, I like to do maybe two or three a year. I also like to get a Christmas one in, if possible.
Uh-huh.
It really, really depends, because it takes a lot of organizing, and sometimes we need a bit of a holiday as well.
Yes. True. And you used to live in Mallorca, is that right?
Yes, I did. I spent many years.
Do you get over there at all?
Yeah, I've still got some interests over there.
You have?
Yep. Yeah. If anybody's going to Mallorca and they're going to into Palma, there's a restaurant called A Maison and Santa Catalina. And if they go to restaurant A Maison, then I have a big interest in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about 12 years ago. About 12 or 13 years ago, I was boarding a plane to Palma from Stansted. The young lady got on, sat at the side of me. And by the time we arrived, we were friends, 2 hours. And she was working at a restaurant in Palma. And I spoke to a friend of mine, Manola. I said, let's go and see what this restaurant's all about. I watched her. Short story is, I decided to invest and I bought her a restaurant.
You bought her a restaurant?
Yes.
Wow.
And she's been running it ever since. She's a genius chef. The restaurant is a French Tunisian, which is quite unique. And It opened 20th of November 2011, and it went through all the difficulties of the pandemic, etc., and it's still working, still operational, and she's become a celebrity chef, actually, because of
it. She really?
Yeah, she's been on television, radio, in the newspapers all the time.
My goodness.
Yeah, it changed her life completely.
And when are you going out there again?
I'm not sure yet. At the moment, we're pretty busy and things happening at the moment, especially organising the next event.
Yeah, that takes a lot of time and dedication, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, when we do go over, we make a point of going and having a good meal at the restaurant.
Yes, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. That's such an amazing story that now she, in effect, is set up for life.
Well, yeah.
You see, there's no such thing as coincidences. She met you and you changed her life.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Do you believe in coincidences?
Well, yes, I do. I think everything happens for a reason. Yeah, even meeting Penny when I'd gone through a rather difficult divorce and maintained that I might enjoy myself and go out with lots of lovely ladies, but I'm never going to settle down with one. And I did.
And here you are.
Absolutely. It's the best decision I ever made.
Oh, that's so sweet. So beautiful.
It took a lifetime to find my soulmate, but there we are. And she's a good cook, bonus.
Well, that helps. That helps a great deal, I hear.
Oh, it does, yes. Got to look after the inner man.
Oh, and Martin, what have you got planned? Are there any projects that you've got planned? I know that you have a book.
Yes. Yes, there's the book, there's the event in April, then there'll be another event to follow that, charity events. Most of my life is spent really charity and trying to help those less fortunate.
And are you still dabbling in show business?
Still dabbling in?
Show business.
Yeah, not really, no. It's mostly just charity. Yeah. Yeah, I think there comes a time in life where you give back, and this is what I'm doing. I'm giving back. I've been very fortunate, and I've attracted a lot of lovely people in my life. I'm surrounded by a lot of loving people, which is an achievement, and bless them all. I mean, that could be seen at at the birthday party that Penny arranged for me last week. It was very humbling that these people were all there to celebrate my birthday.
How many of them came?
Oh, there was about at least 30, if not more.
Mm.
And as I say, you know, some from show business, some from ordinary walks of life. And I blew the candles out and I said, there is a quote that a man who has friends has wealth. And based upon that quote, I must be the richest man in the universe.
Oh.
Looking around, and I said, thank you for being here. And somebody said, we're here because we like you. And it was Anne Hegarty, of all people, looked at me and said, yes, that's why we're here. They don't know how much that meant to me, because whatever I've done, whatever I've achieved, Mimi, I'm proud of what I've done, but I'm also humble at the same time. I don't take anything for granted. And to have them here and saying those things about me was very humbling. And I must admit that I become quite emotional.
What a really true and wonderful thing to have experienced something like that, the love of good friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
It must be humbling.
I am very, very fortunate. I have good friends, unconditional, because a lot of friends have conditions, but I have unconditional friends.
Mm-hmm.
I have love, and I've got the best wife in the world. So what more can a man want?
Oh, that brings a smile not only to my face, but to my heart.
It'll also bring a good meal to my table.
What's for dinner? Tell everybody what's for dinner tonight.
Well, I've already had my chicken soup, of course.
Oh, yes, I know.
Just like my mother used to make.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for the next course, which will be brought to the table after we finish talking. Well, no doubt it'll be roast chicken with roast potatoes or something like that.
How lovely.
What's that, Ben? potato gratin, whatever that is. I get these funny names thrown at me, you see. I started teaching Penny how to make things like, well, asked her to make things like gazpacho. Right? I ended up having gazpacho, chicken soup. I also have a lot of Greek food because Penny's Greek Cypriot, which is wonderful. Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. I love it all. But it's just like a multicultural kitchen here.
I think it's beautiful. And what you have to do, I think, is that you have to take photographs of this wonderful food.
Well, you say that, right? But I object to that. And I'll tell you for why. It's a personal thing. Many years ago, long before I met Penny, I went out with a lady, and every time we sat down to eat, she took a photograph of the meal and then put it on Facebook afterwards. So instead of showing photographs of us, it showed photographs of what we'd been eating. I thought, oh, God, it's terrible.
She could do a little recipe book.
She could. Oh, yeah.
That would be a nice idea.
Yeah.
We'll have to have words with her.
Her Greek lamb, you'd die for, really. It's unbelievable.
That would be such a good idea, actually. Martin, we have to persuade her to do a little recipe book.
Yeah, there you go. Pen, do a recipe book. We'll earn some money.
Oh, dear. Martin, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Mine as well.
Really, thank you so much for sharing a part of your life, which is really extraordinary and fascinating. And I know there are so many stories that you could tell, and I can't wait for you to finish your book so that people out there can actually get to read about your fascinating life.
And all I'm worried about is the names that I mentioned don't decide to issue claims against me.
Well, I'm sure you're wise enough to know how to deal with that, being a lawyer.
I sincerely hope so.
Well, do come again. And next time, you know, you have to do a song for us.
Well, next time I'll be prepared and I'll switch on the CD and you can listen to that.
Yes, I would love to hear it for sure. But thank you very much. I wish you a beautiful evening with your beautiful wife and your beautiful meal.
Yes, and my beautiful son sitting here as well, yes.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Wow. A right little get together.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah,
beautiful. Thanks. Enjoy, truly.
Thank you very much indeed, Minnie. Thank you
so much. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Penny. Bye.
Bye.
Lord Martin Rose, what an absolutely fantastic storyteller. And really, our life is exactly that. A chapter, a story, a memory. Beautiful. Go out there and make more memories. Make them wonderful. Until next time, look after yourselves and lots of love.
Thank you for listening to Secrets for an Inspirational Life, brought to you by your host, Mimi Novick. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast and see you in the next episode. For more information about Mimi Novick and her books, music, and inspirational work, take a look at her website, www.miminovick.co.uk.